This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can also grab off our website at progressive.org. Today, I've got a great writer in the studio with me. His name is Rigoberto Gonzalez, and he's the author most recently of Butterfly Boy, Memories of a Chicano Mariposa. Rigoberto Gonzalez, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Thank you very much for having me here.
For our listeners who may not know what a mariposa is, tell us.
All right. Well, mariposa. Mariposa is literally a butterfly in Spanish, but it has other ramifications. Mariposa is also a slang for homosexual. So that's where I decided to reintroduce this term and give it a very different interpretation, because it is a term of derision, but so was the term Chicano for many years, was also a term of derision. So I have these two words here that have changed meaning and sentiment.
And it's a very common term, isn't it?
Absolutely.
In its derogatory way. Now, you also play with butterflies as a motif throughout.
Absolutely.
You have your family living in the part of Mexico, and this is a memoir, so I assume this is true, where the monarch butterflies migrate to.
Yes, Michoacán specifically, and that's where I think the butterflies travel all the way from Northern United States, Southern Canada, and there's parts of Texas they also migrate to. So they move back and forth in the fall and in the spring.
You know, I've never seen that. I'm a bird watcher. I'm kind of into nature. But I've never seen the congregation of butterflies. I've always wanted to. What does it look like? What is it like to be there?
Well, I experienced it more as a child, and it's sad to say that you better go see it soon, because it's going to be gone because of all the deforestation in Michoacán. So a lot of these territories are actually disappearing, and the butterfly itself is disappearing. So you need to go see it now if you want to see it. But what it feels like, it's such a surreal experience, because I remember the child being very careless and along with other children sort of knocking these entire branches or arms of butterflies off the tree with sticks, because we thought it was fun. Of course, we're actually causing plenty of damage. But when we're young, it was so weird to see the branches can come alive. The whole tree comes alive, and it looks like it's on fire. And I actually wrote a poem about that, describing it as fireworks without sound. I mean, that's exactly what it looks like.
It's almost surreal sounding.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I'm speaking with Rigoberto Gonzalez, author of Butterfly Boy, Memories of a Chicano Mariposa. You also then make an analogy between the migrating butterfly and the Chicano migrant workers.
Yes, I do. I come from three generations of grape pickers specifically. And our family trajectory has been so that my great-grandfather is born in Mexico. My grandfather is born in the U.S. My father is born in Mexico, and I'm born in the U.S. But my grandfather and I, who were born in the U.S., were actually raised in Mexico. So we have that kind of shows the pattern of migration there, too, as a parallel. Every generation we seem to move around. And my family actually returned to Mexico in 1992, and the next generation is being born in Mexico.
And they have not traveled to the U.S. or not
no,
as
they,
much as
no,
you have?
No, they haven't. The grape picking as a job, I think the next generation is opting not to do it after three generations of migrant farm workers. Part of it is because it's become difficult to support a family. It always has been, but now even now it's more difficult. I think the next generation got tired of the seasonal shifting back and forth and wanted a little more stability, which is very new.
Is any part of it, to do with how much more difficult it is now to cross the border?
It is. I mean, nowadays, like, you know, if once a family gets their resume papers, they tend to stay put. I know my family was sort of like last sort of hanging on to that lifestyle, but it is way more difficult, and it's not cost effective anymore. It really isn't.
You write in one line in this book, Rigoberto Gonzalez, that you're trying to imagine what it would be like to be a creature who doesn't migrate.
Yes.
You know, what kind of life do people have who don't migrate and just sit still? Because I imagine that was something that was just out of your ability to imagine, just being steady in one place.
It still is. Believe it or not, I think every 2 years I've moved as an adult, and somebody actually commented to me that I've become from a migrant farm worker to now a migrant writer.
An itinerant professor or something.
Yes.
There's a third allusion to butterflies. It comes very early in this book, yes. And that is your lover, who is implanting hickeys on your back in the shape of butterflies.
Yes. Well, this book is about a number of journeys, shifting from one geography to another, shifting from being a child to an adult, from being having a relationship with the male figures, my family, my father, my grandfather, to then my adult male lovers. So yes, butterfly there was no other image to really use to encapsulate all of these different journeys, all these different relationships that I was having, and also the different kinds of oppressions and difficulties that I was trying to encounter and work through as a young adult. So yes, butterflies also refers to hickeys.
Rigoberto Gonzalez, I wanted to talk about those difficult, really abusive relationships that you had with male figures in this book. Your father, and the book is almost a reconciliation story, not quite, with your father. Your grandfather was one of the most abusive figures I've ever read about in all my time in literature. This is a guy who would chop off the tails of cats with a cleaver, including the cat in your house.
Right, including our own cats.
And he was abusive in every way possible. Emotionally abusive, physically abusive. But perhaps the most disturbing thing, because I think people have read about abusive parents so much, and grandparents and macho figures in the family, was the fact that, in a way, you reproduce this, or this abusive relationship was reproduced in your relationship with this lover.
Right, right. Well, I wanted to also make clear that, I hope I made clear in the book that it wasn't... that I wasn't blaming my family for why I became stuck in an abusive relationship. It was a completely different world, and I think that's why I turned to my family for some kind of guidance and comfort. And that's what the book is about, is going, returning to my father to find a guidance, find an answer, to finally look at him and say, you know, you're my father. You're supposed to be giving me this ability to survive and to learn this knowledge that I need to understand relationships. Of course, it didn't work, and that's what part of the book has to negotiate. But I think at the end I did learn something, one that I had to look within, that I had to rely on myself to find this new tropes, these new ways of thinking, because I wasn't going to find them in my family.
Mm-hmm. And you do, at the end, say, I've got to own up as an adult for all the decisions and choices I make, which is the definition of maturity in a way. Mm-hmm. But so why do you think you are attracted in a way to relationships of abuse there? And more so than that, even, why did you find it... I was going to say liberating, but you have a passage in there where you said you felt like you were finally in control, even though in a way you weren't in control.
Yeah, I think there's some kind of, maybe there was a familiarity with this kind of relationship, that the conflict, this displaced or demonstrated at least either communication, that conflict demonstrated perhaps affection or love, because I lived in a very affectionless family, and it didn't mean that we didn't love each other, we just didn't express it, that we found very odd ways to express the love we have for each other. And I think that that's the only kind of, the only knowledge I had about relationships. So when I ended up in a similar relationship, and a romantic one, I thought, well, maybe the only way to do it. But something told me that it wasn't. Somebody told me this was all wrong, that this was going to kill me if I continued in this path. And I think also in terms of reevaluating same-sex relationships, I knew that the secrecy and the privacy of the relationship I was having was also putting me in some kind of a danger, because I wasn't telling people, because I wasn't able to, people weren't able to see that I was in this abusive relationship, that was also very harmful. So I needed to find another way out.
Because the secrecy protected the abuser.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I'm speaking with Rigoberto Gonzalez, author of Butterfly Boy, Memories of a Chicano Mariposa. The ending looks like it's promising you're going to leave the abusive lover, but it's not quite clear, because you've left him. By now we know you've left him three times and come back.
Uh-huh.
Are we supposed to be questioning whether you're going to come back or not?
I think so. I think even though in reality I did not go back to that relationship, but I wanted to leave that a little bit open, because I went through that experience doesn't mean, okay, now I've learned, now I know. I wanted to leave room in there to let people understand that I was still capable of mistakes, that I wasn't going to be flawless, that I wasn't going to stumble through another relationship, but I knew that I was never going to be in one this abusive or this severe.
Mm-hmm. But that there, those traps were still out there.
Absolutely.
Anyway. Now, this is obviously an intensely personal memoir. Was it difficult to write, or was it cathartic to write?
But a little bit of both. I think that the hardest part was actually having to recall this relationship, a relationship that I wanted to forget about. You know, when we go to something so traumatic, we don't want to remember it. So in order to write the memoir, I had to remember, I had to recall, I had to re-experience. And which is why this character remains a little bit vague. He's nameless. That's one thing I wanted to make sure of. That way I was in control, because here I'm recreating this relationship and this particular person in my life, but he wasn't all there because he was a very vague figure. I mean, most of the time that he speaks are these ghost whispers that I call them.
Or he looks at you with one eye. And
absolutely, he looks at me through one eye, right.
Well, tell me what the reception has been to this book within the Chicano community.
Well, since it is a very, as a memoir, it's one of the few that touches on sexuality this openly and this explicitly. I think it's just finding its grounding and its readership. But I've had very positive responses from young gay Latinos who have finally found a connection. You know, we've had a huge literature, wonderful literature, but very few of it with this kind of a thread. Here I am gay and I'm Chicano, and therefore other gay Chicanos have now a book that they can turn to, maybe not to see themselves in an abusive relationship, but to see themselves as a person with complexity and with difficulties. I've had a very interesting reception from the queer community, and this is at large, and that's been sort of both appreciative and also apprehensive about being open and finally bringing out this problem that is present in the queer community, which is domestic violence.
Abuse.
That exists not only in heterosexual relationships, but also in homosexual relationships. And so I've had kind of a little bit of both. People are happy, they welcome the book and say, it's about time we start talking about this. And others are a little more suspect. They're like, well, you know, here we are in a very interesting time where we must present a very positive perspective of who we are.
Don't air your dirty laundry.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And is there something about being gay in the Chicano community, in the Chicano culture, that is different, say, you as a Chicano farm worker family, mm-hmm. than, you know, say, some white male privileged kid who goes to Exeter Academy and comes out? Because the book, after all, is called Butterfly Boy: Memories of a Chicano Mariposa.
Well, you know, in terms of coming out, in terms of exploring sexuality, I do want to make it clear that it's difficult no matter what community one comes from. And also there's a class issue. And so I do come from a very poor family. And therefore, you know, there were other things that we were going to have to deal with before dealing with my sexuality. And one of our poverty was one, which is why I found it necessary to leave home. I felt, you know, our family right now, we're struggling to survive. The last thing I want to do is to make it even more difficult, not only for myself, but for my family. And I didn't have the vocabulary. I didn't have the role models, because there wasn't this literature around for me to even begin to talk about sexuality within my family.
And in a way, you don't finish that coming out sentence toward the end of the book when you're about to come out to your father. Your father says he knows more about you than
right.
you think. And you ask him, what do you know, or you're about to, and neither, then you both pull back.
Absolutely, because it's one of those things, you know, the don't ask, don't tell type of policy, especially with, you know, families. Less because we're Catholic, even though we are Catholic, we're not very practicing Catholics. It's more about how nobody knows how to deal with gay children, gay children in Latino culture. We just don't have that kind of exposure yet, that kind of knowledge about how do you move within the space. You know, because you're supposed to always present a very positive image of yourself, and sexuality is still seen very negative. I mean, it's seen negatively in this whole country, let alone, you know, in Chicano culture.
And yet that space seems to be opening.
Absolutely.
Gradually.
Absolutely. It is.
And it is within the Latino culture as well.
It is. There's a whole generation of young gay Chicanos that are writing out there now, Manuel Munoz and Alex Espinosa, and I'm very excited about what they're doing. So we're becoming a critical mass. It's exciting to see that.
You're listening to Progressive Radio. I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine. I'm interviewing the great writer today, Rigoberto Gonzalez, author of Butterfly Boy: Memories of a Chicano Mariposa. I highly recommend it. It's incredibly gripping, both in many ways, in its account of gay sexuality and coming out, and its account of being a Chicano going across borders. Yes. And its account of poverty. You mentioned the poverty. Mm-hmm. There is an amazing passage in there that talks about your days of want and what it means to feel hunger. I think that would open a lot of people's eyes to not the nobility of poverty, but the real tragedy of poverty.
Right. That was one of the hardest passages to write. In fact, in the first couple of drafts, it was not there because it was a very difficult to go back and relive that experience. And that's a passage where my mother is giving me a cube of sugar. That's all she can give me when I'm very young, and being and feeling that I have to consume this little piece of sugar. Because I don't know what was in my head thinking, why she comes back for it, or to change her mind. So I had to finish this before she came back. It was this bizarre kind of psychology that it built around hunger.
Hmm. Yeah, here's just two lines. We were going hungry. A person who experiences hunger never forgets that feeling. It is more than emptiness, more than an ache at the center of the stomach. It is a waking up and going to bed with shame.
Yes.
As if this stiffness of the jaw and hardening of the belly is part of some punishment.
Yes.
That really drives it home. Now, you mentioned that you're a family of mm-hmm. farm workers, three generations of farm workers. There are hints in here about the farm workers' movement. Cesar Chavez has mentioned, I didn't count how many times, but in the beginning parts of the book, at first or second mention, it's kind of a scene setter, that which is to say the family is looking for work. There are not a lot of jobs, in part because the strike is on and the fields aren't right. being picked. So to that extent, Cesar Chavez and the farm workers represented a problem for the family's income. And yet then at the end, in the last couple chapters or so, we find out that your mother, who is a tragic figure in here mm-hmm. and dies at the age of 31, and sounds like a wonderful woman too, mm-hmm. That she was an activist, a union member, and had a Cesar Chavez UFW button.
Yeah, absolutely.
What role did the farm workers play in your family's life?
Well, our family was very proudly, we have a term for it, Chavista, and that's people who allied themselves with the migrant, with the Chavez movement and the United Farm Workers. We're very proud, and even though there were times when people were left out of work because you had to, once you ally yourself, that means you joined the picket line, that means you didn't work, that means you didn't have money. But it was a very noble, participation, and people believed in what Cesar Chavez was going to do for all of us. In the end, we knew that he was going to fight for these important rights, the right for job security, the right for benefits as farm workers. So even I don't think my family ever resented having to be unemployed. We actually accepted it as part of a larger struggle. We were very, very, my grandparents were very hardly political, and I have so many photographs that I discovered of me when I'm, I think, 3 or 4 years old, walking in the picket lines of Fresno. And I was so shocked. And I remember showing it to my uncle telling me, these are historical photographs. You're like in the Cesar Chavez March. And there's my grandma, and there's my cousin, there's my grandma, my father, my mother were all part of this. Because we all felt it was important to be part of this movement. This is what our family had been doing for so many generations. We didn't think there was going to change. My parents, my grandparents always thought that I was going to be a farm worker as well. So they thought, well, you know, we're looking ahead. We're looking at the future. We've got to make this profession, this job, and this environment safer and better for the kids.
Well, tell me how it is that you didn't become a farm worker, because you write in this book, I feel lucky this was not my fate.
There are a number of things. One is knowing that in order to live the life I knew I was going to live as a gay man, I could not stay home. Two, I wanted to break out of this abusive family. My grandfather definitely was very emotionally abusive, and the way out became going to college. And it's interesting because I thought the plan was I was going to be going away for college for 1 year and then come back. I didn't think you went away for college and then never came back, but I learned very quickly the first couple of months showing up at this university and understanding what a major was, that I didn't have to go to class every day. Everything was a learning experience, and I realized I wised up so quickly and realized, you know what, that's it, there's no going back.
And you had an aptitude for studies that appeared quite early in your life.
Yes. Well, books actually were my escape. I lived in a very, very crowded house. There were 19 of us at one point.
And how many rooms was it?
I think it was only like 3 rooms. Mm-hmm. It was like 3 rooms. There weren't any rooms. Some were like just partitions. There weren't many rooms. So there were the 11 of us kids, and we all had to live in the living room. That's where we all slept. And I remember the only the only room, my own, the only space I could have was in a book, because I remember being left alone by my cousins and my siblings when I was reading. So that's why that was becoming my private space. So that became the way for me to escape and also to explore sexuality, because I found books that dealt with these feelings that I was experiencing. I thought, oh, here's the place. Here's the text is going to give me a little bit of knowledge of who I am.
Is there any book that sticks out, or a couple books from that?
There's a couple. There was I think Jack London's The Sea Wolf was one, and even Forster's Maurice was another one. But also Greek mythology, and I think Greek mythology, I mean, I just went for the covers, right? The very erotic, you know, Greek statues, and then reading all this stuff, and you mean Zeus is fooling around with a Ganymede, and so what is this all about? So there, that became my way to learn about it, because it certainly wasn't television. It wasn't apparent, and certainly was not my family. And
yeah, you're right that there were no books in the family. No. So how did the books appear?
The books happened through a fantastic group of teachers that I had, who knew that I had an affinity toward books. A bookmobile that came by every Sunday was fantastic, because there was no library nearby, so bookmobile made its way there. So I had these spaces. The library and at the school was important to me, and also my teachers who responded to my need and that I craved books.
Rigoberto Gonzalez is the author of Butterfly Boy: Memories of a Chicano Mariposa. When did you discover that you were a writer?
I think I fantasized so much about being a writer when I was in high school, because as we're thinking ahead, well, what are you going to do? What are you going to do when you go to college? What are you going to do? And I thought, well, I guess I'll be a teacher. And I want to be a teacher of literature, because I love my English class and English teachers. But the step from being an avid and a very eager reader to a writer was very small. And I think it was some kind of a challenge as the senior to write a poem, and I absolutely loved it. I loved it. That's how I learned to English.
I thought you were going to say the poetry. Step was going to be very large.
No, it was very, very small for me. I mean, I learned about rhythms and this creative way of employing language on the page. Soon after coming to this country, that's how I learned how to read. You know, somebody gave me a book of poetry to read, because to learn how to enunciate the English language. And I loved it, absolutely loved it. So my first poems were all bad imitations of this poetry. But eventually I found a voice. I found a voice. And in college, I was introduced to a whole group of writers, many of whom were still alive, because in high school we only got the dead ones. So in college, that's why I was introduced to all these writers. And that's, again, opened up my world. The possibilities of what I could do with language were right there.
We have about 5-6 minutes left. I wanted to talk with you about politics today, because there is this, while there's been progress certainly on issues of gay rights in this mm-hmm. country, there is also retrenchment, there's reaction, and yes. There's reaction on issues of immigration as well.
Absolutely.
I'm wondering what your feeling is about the immigration debate, about the great immigration rights movement that blossomed mm-hmm. last spring. And about some of the right-wingers who want to send everybody back.
Well, it's interesting, because when I have these kinds of conversations with my family, it's we know that no matter what, you can build walls or make them larger walls, it's not going to stop the flow of people into this country. And one of those reasons is because many of us are already here. We're already here. There's no way that we're going to leave. I think it's sad that, and I always believe that this focus on immigrants, scapegoating, is to draw attention away to some of the serious problems in this country. And I suspect that you know, focusing on these people that we see and we live with every day is easier than focusing on the problems across the oceans, where people we don't see and deal with every day.
What are some of the problems here that you think it's deflecting from, or what are the most serious problems you think confronting us?
Frankly, I think it's the stereotyping of the Mexican as only a worker. You know, there was this movie that came out not so long ago called Day Without a Mexican. And I remember talking with other Mexican writers and intellectuals, and everybody said, well, okay, so in this movie, all the kitchen workers and all the maids disappeared. Well, did the doctors disappear? Did the professors disappear? Because that's what we also do. Did the writers disappear? You know, why is it that we're not only a working class people here, where our communities extend through all the classes.
So that's not just in the economic sphere either. There are people at the church. There are
absolutely, people, you know. Absolutely. And in terms of the gay rights, you know, it's interesting because during the year, last election year, my children's book, Antonio's Card, came out, and this is about a book about a little boy with two mothers. And receiving all, and because of the, here's Bush running against this, the platform of the anti-queer, which actually, you know, brought in a lot of Latino voters, because a lot of Latinos, our Latino population is still very conflicted and has a lot of issues, you know, with that. So
they ruined that with their anti-immigration
stuff. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So the whole, you know, so when that book came out and I realized just how hateful, because I received a lot of death threats.
You know. How did they come? What did they say?
Wow, I don't know if I can quote them directly, but yeah. It was, you know,
emails, phone calls,
yeah, emails. You know, be careful. You know, when you go on, be careful where when you go out to promote this book. You know, we're going to be there, type of thing. And I've only had one demonstration, and ironically, it was in San Francisco, the queerest, you know, immigrant city ever. And that's when the only time I had a demonstration, when I gave a reading of the children's book. But other than that, the reception was really good, and I got to meet a whole bunch of communities and same-sex parents and so forth. So I know that despite all this adversity, we're going to survive. We're going to get through it.
Part of the vividness of this book, Butterfly Boy, Memories of a Chicano Mariposa, is your expression of how natural it is to be gay. And you're writing, "What if I was meant to be a girl?" An incredible passage also in the book that I like so much. And then another line, "Sex with another man seems so natural to me."
Yes.
There's the conception out there by the far right that this is, you know, a sin, it's against nature. How do you respond to that?
You know, I think I'm, because I live in New York City, I'm so removed from that environment that I don't have to think about it too much. I don't have television, so I'm removed from that as well. And it's not a way to hide from it. It's just, I occupy a space where I feel safe, and I think through my literature, I've hoped that I'm creating safe space for other people. And I keep being surprised. I don't know why I keep being surprised, but I remember going to a pro-choice demonstration once in Santa Fe, and seeing these signs that said, "You're all going to hell." And I remember very earnestly turning to my friends, saying, "People still believe in hell?" You know, because I'm so removed from that.
Been in New York too long.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. Been in New York so long. But also, I like to think that I've been surrounding myself, and this is my way to survive. I'm in the academy. I'm in New York City. I work with a very intelligent, progressive writers. I mean, that is my community. So we can't ignore that there's other communities out there we have to speak to.
Yeah, I mean, Adrienne Rich, the great poet, said we need to build our tree houses without a tree.
Absolutely.
And so that's, you know, that's what Madison, Wisconsin is largely as well. And so I enjoy it for that reason. But I just wonder, when you face those pickets, or when people want to take your book, as I assume some of them do, out of the public library.
Yes, they have.
Have you been successful in fighting back that? Or has it been taken out of some libraries?
Well, the irony is that when a book is banned, or when a book receives that kind of controversy, it receives the right attention. And all of a sudden, people that would want to see the book, or wouldn't want to, or wouldn't know about the book, know about it. So it's a little double-edged sword. It's banned, but then it receives the kind of attention. So it kind of backfires a little bit on them. And I kind of let it take its course, and it's been great.
Well, there's one way to get your revenge on those right-wingers. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have today. Thank you so much for being my guest. My guest has been Rigoberto Gonzalez, the author of Butterfly Boy, Memories of a Chicano Mariposa.
Thank you very much.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.